Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Well, it's day two of the Paris Climate Talks, hosted by the United Nations, and day two of our series on Massachusetts' readiness for global warming. And in Paris today, President Obama struck a hopeful tone.
On all these dimensions, it's hard to come up with a tougher problem than climate change, or a more consequential problem. And yet, despite all that, the main message I've got is, I actually think we're going to solve this thing.
Obama and other heads of state depart Paris today, leaving the hard work of detailed negotiations to the delegates remaining at the climate conference. But true long-term success in curbing global warming is going to require embracing some inconvenient truths. That's according to Joshua Goldstein and Steven Pinker in a recent Boston Globe op-ed. Chief amongst those inconvenient truths? Nuclear power. Well, Joshua Goldstein is Emeritus Professor of International Relations at American University and currently a research scholar at UMass Amherst. He joins us now. Professor Goldstein, welcome to the program.
Good to be with you.
So first of all, tell us, the headline from your op-ed was Inconvenient Truths that Environmentalists Must Embrace. Why nuclear power, chief among them?
Well, the climate crisis is just worse than people realize, even environmentalists who realize it's bad. People say climate change has arrived, and it has in some sense, but the worst is still to come. And I'm not saying this is a specific scenario, but if you can imagine 8 feet of snow in Boston last winter, What if it was 25 feet of snow? What if it was all winter long? What if, and this is a potential scenario in some tipping points that could happen, this entire area was under a mile-thick sheet of ice?
Right, another ice age.
So if we're in that kind of a crisis, and I'm 13th generation Massachusetts, I was born in Boston, I would like to think that this city's going to keep going for more generations. This is like a slow motion version of an asteroid headed for Earth. We need all hands on deck. We need all solutions. We need to really focus on solving this problem, not just taking some steps in the right direction.
So I appreciate the intensity with which you and many, many others foresee the grim future of our climate. But again, if I may draw you to what you wrote in the Globe, a lot of people will say, okay, yes, but nuclear power should not be amongst the solutions.
Because we need all of these solutions. Now, our best climate scientists, the ones who understand how serious this is, people like James Hansen and Kerry Emanuel from here in MIT, are in Paris right now. They're having a press conference day after tomorrow, and they say, quote, renewables alone cannot realistically meet the goal. That's the 2% 2-degree change that we're shooting for. And, quote, a major expansion of nuclear power is essential. We cannot take off the table our main source right now of carbon-free electricity production. Renewables are great. I'm all for them. I've got them on my roof. I drive an electric car. But it's not going to get us to where we need to go. And if you start taking nuclear plants offline, as we've been doing, if we stall the world's progress in rolling out nuclear power, the alternative is not solar right now. It's coal. If you're anti-nuclear, you're pro-coal. I know that's harsh, but that is the reality right now. Coal is the fastest growing source of energy in the world this century.
Okay.
And coal kills 1 million people a year, 1 million a year in the world. So when you're talking about nuclear might cause a few cases of cancer, or you're worried that people might have to move if radiation leaks or something, these are hypothetical. And they're small numbers, but coal is the reality. So that's why nuclear.
Okay. So let me just jump in here, because this is a very, it's a very important topic, because as you quoted, yes, I mean, James Hansen is not one to be trifled with. He's one of the leading voices on things that we need to do in order to curb the effects of climate change. But let me just dig into what you said here, because a lot of people will say, wait a minute. Being anti-nuclear doesn't necessarily mean being pro-coal. In fact, for a lot of people, it means being pro other clean energy sources, being pro-solar, being pro-wind, and that all the vast amounts of money that it takes to bring a new nuclear power plant online today, if we put that money into these other clean energy sources with the same, you know, investment and vigor, that it could fill the gap.
Well, it can't fill the gap. We should do it, but it's not going to get us there. China is building two new coal plants every day. India has 500 new coal plants in the works now that are going to go online. And even here in Massachusetts, where we're way ahead of the game, we're the greenest state out there, as we should be, we still get 10% of our electricity from coal and only 3% from wind and solar. Now we're ramping up the wind and solar. But we're getting 12% from nuclear now, but we're taking that offline. So if you're putting in wind and solar, but you're taking off nuclear, you're not doing anything to get the coal out of the picture, mm-hmm. much less the natural gas, and which is putting methane in and so forth.
Well, so, you know, as you mentioned, you're a 13th generation New Englander,
right.
You say?
Okay. Yep.
So you know the region's long and complicated history with nuclear, which, you know, just this year, we had the latest chapter in that when in October, Pilgrim was closed, or was announced that it will be closed by June of 2019. And we have a clip here from Bill Mole, who oversees Entergy's nuclear power plants that includes Pilgrim. And here's what he said when they announced the plant's eventual closure.
Pilgrim is simply no longer financially viable. Our decision to close Pilgrim was based on a combination of reduced revenues, poor market structure, challenging regional energy policy, and increased operational cost.
So there he provides a whole set of reasons that have nothing to do with, you know, the questions about the safety of nuclear at all, but just the market structure isn't there anymore.
Well, we have cheap natural gas now because of the fracking revolution, but we're not charging for the carbon pollution that that gas is creating. And we have methane leaks along the line in the gas system, which are contributing to global warming. So we need to charge for carbon that's put into the atmosphere. And there is a bill in the Massachusetts legislature now, the Barrett bill, which would begin to do that. So that's, and there's another one in Rhode Island or the greater Boston area, as I think of it, called Energize Rhode Island. You can Google that. And there's a national campaign, the Citizens Climate Lobby, to begin to price carbon. So if natural gas were paying its fair share for the cost it's creating down the road, nuclear would be more cost effective. But the Vermont Yankee plant just closed a year ago, mm-hmm. and they were trying to sell Vermont electricity at below 5 cents a kilowatt hour. That's a good price. But there's an unfavorable climate, political climate for nuclear, as we know, in Vermont, and they shut the plant down. Then they went over and bought electricity from Seabrook instead.
Right. Well, we have to hit the concerns, the safety concerns that people have about nuclear head on. Because, I mean, in your op-ed with Steven Pinker, you do mention Fukushima. Also, of course, there's Chernobyl as well. And in those cases, you know, you mentioned that that no one may have died. But on the other hand, I mean, at least, you know, in the case of Chernobyl, I think there was an April 2006 report from the European Union that found that 30,000 to 60,000 additional cancer fatalities may be caused due to Chernobyl. And at the same time, to this day, many decades after that disaster, there's still a 1,000 square mile exclusion zone around there. So the risk, the perceived and, you know, real risk of nuclear is quite high, that maybe we haven't had a lot of disasters, but if and when they come, they are massive, and that is not worth the benefit.
Well, they're not massive. Chernobyl is the one case in 50 years of this industry that really has been a serious, fatal catastrophe, and the World Health Organization estimated about 4,000 cases of cancer that may come out of that, and less than 100 people killed directly in the rescue operations. Fukushima, nobody was killed. The best estimate of cancer, and you can quibble with the numbers, but the best estimate is zero. If it's not zero, it's pretty darn close to zero. Now, again, a million deaths a year from coal. So if you are going to say nuclear is too dangerous, what the heck? People are dying every day in large numbers from coal mining, from particulate matter from coal. Until we take the last coal plant offline, and we're doing the exact opposite now, building more and more, till we take the last one off, then nuclear power is going to save a lot of lives. In fact, James Hansen estimates it's saved 3 million lives already from the coal that it's displaced. Yeah.
You know, I have to say that in your op-ed that you wrote, and we'll link to it at radioboston.org, there was one thing I was very taken by, and that was your call for basically kind of getting the nation in sort of a moonshot mindset, right? Like let's put in the effort to figuring out our energy future in the same way that we put our effort into going to the moon. We had never done that. Between the time JFK said we should do it to when Neil Armstrong set foot on the moon, 9 years. It was just 9 years. So we can do it. That now, with that in mind, if I just may, Professor Goldstein, I was also looking at the fact that the last nuclear reactor built in the United States, Watts Bar 1 in Tennessee, it opened in 1996. Construction for that plant began in 1973 because of all the regulatory hurdles that they have to clear in order to get a new plant online. That is a lot of time, money, and energy spent for one plant. Why not put all that time, money, and energy into other sources that are more forward-looking in terms of technology, viability, and longevity?
Right. So we need a clean energy revolution. We need a massive research and development, just like the Apollo program had it. And we need it in nuclear because there's these fourth-generation nuclear designs that are going to be cheaper, cleaner, proliferation-resistant, safer. And one of them is right here in Boston, the Transatomic company that's going to make molten salt reactors. We don't know which ones are going to work yet, but to get these things off the drawing board, we need this clean energy revolution. We also need revolutionary battery designs so that wind and solar can go 24/7. And we need carbon capture. So the great thing is that we are Boston. We are the brains of the world here. This is where we innovate. I always say innovate locally, adopt globally. If we make these new things, the better, cheaper nuclear power plants, the batteries and so forth, here in Boston, we can export them to the world. It's going to be great for our economy and we'll save the world doing it. So we should be leading this, just like Massachusetts has led the way in many other innovations, healthcare, same-sex marriage, the American Revolution, for heaven's sakes. We innovate here and then spread it to the world, and we could play a big role in this clean energy revolution.
Well, Joshua Goldstein is Emeritus Professor of International Relations at American University. He's a research scholar at UMass Amherst. He co-authored an op-ed in The Globe with Steven Pinker called Inconvenient Truths for the Environmental Movement. Fascinating read. We've got a link to it at radioboston.org. Professor Goldstein, such a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you so much.
Thanks, my pleasure.
Well, tomorrow we'll continue our series on the Paris Climate Talks and the impact of global warming on Massachusetts with environmental economist Robert Stavins. He'll talk about the actual cost of implementing proposals that could be coming out of Paris. That's tomorrow. But stay with us. There's more of the show in just a minute. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.